Next item is the fire season update. And obviously, this is an informational item today.
Good morning, Chair Imeson, members of the board, State Forest Authority. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. I appreciate the plug from the presentation in advance. We were planning to help keep on time, but we'll stick to a full presentation with the work there for a status update on the fire season 2019. Also would highlight overall, appreciate the position we're in today, as State Forest highlighted. No late evening emails from me to the board this fire season to date. I hope to keep that pattern going, nothing on the weekends. So overall, favorable position. We're in the presentation today. Deputy Chief Fire Protection Ron Graham will present today overall status, condition, stats to date, and we'll close with a safety message. Board Member Rose had a question on safety. We added a slide as a consistent to our slide deck for all our presentations. Board Member Rose, if there's any feedback today or following the meeting one-on-one with the safety manager, make sure we want to get what you're after in that data on the report. Also, we met the first fire season update in June with the board. We focused on readiness and what we thought was coming and highlighted the fire season to date, particularly the March and the May fires that we experienced early this fire season. So we'll focus looking ahead on today's presentation. Finally, back to the safety message on your on the agenda, you see Blake Ellis, who is our interim fire operations manager in place. We were hoping to introduce him to you today, but he's closing out a review of a close call on a major incident that we had that we'd highlight on the safety slide at closing this message. So we have Ron Graham.
Good morning, Chair Imeson, members of the board, and State Forester Daugherty. For the record, my name is Ron Graham. I serve as the Deputy Chief of the Fire Protection Division. As Doug mentioned, when we last spoke to you in June, what we were anticipating and preparing for was a slightly above average fire season. The predictions of significant fire potential have changed very little. However, as we've talked about already, July has not felt like a very above average fire season for us all, and that's okay. If you look at this slide from the top left down to the lower right, again, it's very consistent through the remainder of July, August, and September, with Western Oregon showing still potential for significant fire potential and above average portion. So we'll see how that plays out as we move forward. Looking a little bit more short term, looking at the 8 to 14 day outlook, as you look at the upper left corner in the precipitation, much of the state is running about a 30 to 40% chance of being below normal precipitation for the next 14 days. And as we head into August, significant precipitation across the state averages only about a half an inch, so not a lot of precipitation in August to begin with. You look at the lower right slide, the temperature slightly above normal in a good swath of the state, with the exception of far northeast Oregon, running equal chances of being normal. A little bit of southwest Oregon, a little stronger percent chance of having above normal temps for the remainder of this 8 to 14 day outlook. Also, just wanted to highlight that with this, we are starting to really kind of see a little bit of a shift to a more summer weather pattern finally. That's been partially the cause of our a little bit of a lull here in this fire season since May, definitely not in a normal summer weather pattern. So with that shift and with some recent fire activity, the northwest geographic area has now moved effective this morning at 9:30 into preparedness level 2. So we enjoyed preparedness level 1, our lowest level, for quite some time now, and just now moving into 2. And essentially what that means is fire activity is picking up, resource commitment is getting a little bit more involved across the geographic area, but things are still very manageable with the resources that we have. Looking ahead to August, again, for August, pretty much equal chance on the precipitation side. And as I said earlier, that equates to not much precipitation anyway. And again, stronger percent chance of being above normal for the month of August. And again, we'll see how that tracks and plays out as we move forward. With that as well, drought is moving in, kind of in the western third of the state, a little bit stronger in far northwest Oregon. So despite the rain that seemed really plentiful, the rain was not totally widespread in coverage. And as we move into these months ahead of us, where no significant precipitation normally occurs, we'll continue to see that drought build in.
I would add in at this point in June when we reported out to you, we had abnormally dry, moderate drought in the far northwest part of Oregon. So that expansion is really key to track and understand and reinforce what early predictions have been, which is higher elevated potential on the west side. So it's coming to fruition as you look at the background drought conditions. Looking at that spread down the southwest, and then you can see it wrapping around Mount Hood into the gorge area. So high winds will be a factor that we'd be watching in that area as we look at conditions curing and elevated for large fire growth potential.
Looking at our fire stats for the year to date, this is as of the 22nd, a lot of information on this slide to cover, but a couple of the highlights. You see the little gold star, that's 96% effective, keeping fires at 10 acres or less. So that's right around our average for this time of year and annually. A couple of things more to note. If you look at the fires to date, as of this date, 433 fires for 1,472 acres. That is actually more fires than our 10-year average, but it is less. So 13% more fires than the 10-year average, but 20% less fires year-to-date as compared to last year. So last year was very significant fire activity starting in June, July. And while we saw that early activity, then we had a little bit of a slowdown for June and July. Acres burned significantly less. So considerable amount when you look at our normal 10-year average of 10,000 acres. Last year, year-to-date, 49,000 acres. This year, 1,472. So considerably less acres burned. Many of the fires have been kept very small, and I'll highlight some of that here going on. When we talked in June, we spoke about our readiness. Doug mentioned some of that. We had all of our seasonal firefighters on board. All districts are in fire season. We have 7 days staffing, and we've also brought on all of our severity contract aviation resources and our hand crew. Wanted to highlight the severity resources, and recently over in Eastern Oregon on the Conger fire near Monument, severity aircraft was heavily used. That fire was fairly inaccessible. One of the key things we do with severity aircraft is we buy ourselves time getting water and firefighters to remote fires while other ground resources can get there. And on the Conger fire, severity resources contributing significantly, keeping that fire at 55 acres. This could have easily been a large fire on the landscape. So without the use of those severity resources, we'd probably be talking about a large fire on ODF protection, possibly a team deployment. So the statewide briefing map, this is something we routinely show you. Usually, again, it's a little bit busier than this. But some of the highlights on the map are that year-to-date, we've had no ODF and incident management team deployments, no fire management assistant grant qualifying fires. There's been no Pacific Northwest interagency incident management team deployments in the state, and no Conflagration Act deployments with the state fire marshals. So a lot of zeros across those significant factors on the fire season. However, you know, we've had some notable fires. We've had about 5 fires on ODF protection that are over 100 acres or more. Starting back in March, actually in April in Lakeview, March with the Saniam Park fire in North Cascade, May with the Medco B fire in Southwest Oregon, and then June, the Trojan fire in Western Oregon, and Day's Coffee in the Douglas Forest Protection Association area. The largest fire, though, only 345 acres with the Medco B. So very significant decrease in large fire activity. As I mentioned, though, we are transitioning into that more summer-like pattern. We've seen three consecutive days of thunderstorms, fairly dry, producing lightning in eastern Oregon, and that has produced quite an uptick in initial attack. But again, successful initial attack with our resources and our partners. Southeast Oregon, down around Jordan Valley, has seen a little bit of an uptick in activity on BLM rangelands. Some of those fires getting up to 2,500 acres. But again, plenty of resources right now to check those and keep them from becoming even bigger. So financially, what this equates to us is a lot of good news. Last year at the end of July, our gross fire costs were $43 million, with net fire costs of $12 million. This year, as the end of June, which was all previous fiscal year fires, we closed out at $3,300,000 gross and $2,300,000 net expenditures. So quite a significant difference in expenditures in large fire costs this year compared to last year.
I would also add on the map a compelling piece to note is there's often scattered blue on this map. What drives the numbers of fires in the state of Oregon is human cause. Over 75% of our fires are human cause. What tends to drive the majority of our acres are the lightning fires, which come at us at hundreds at a time at one point across the state in remote areas. That drives the acres burned. So one of the key issues to date, we haven't seen the dry lightning events that we've experienced in previous fire seasons. We've had lightning. They've come with moisture to date, and that's been a game changer in terms of acres burned and cost and resource loss and firefighters' exposure at this point.
Looking ahead, air quality, we wanted to give just a little bit of an update there. As in past years, this map has looked very different with the red to dark red dots on it for poor air quality and a much needed relief, especially in Southwest Oregon and across the state right now. Air quality is being reported as good. Brief technology update. Last month in June, we updated you on the strategic investments program through the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, the landowner dollars that were being used to upgrade our technology and fire detection with infrared cameras. Something else that we've been working on here recently is testing the feasibility of single engine air tanker use for suppression at night. We've done this in association with a vendor, CoFire, who's done testing in Colorado at the Center for Aviation Excellence as well. What this entails is using lasers, other locators, working at night to identify targets, fires in the future, and locate ground resources. So what you see on the slide is a laser pointing at what would be a target for a fire, and that's what the pilot sees through night vision goggles. So far, testing has been very promising. There's a lot of work and coordination to be done with our federal partners and a lot of updating to any policies, procedures that we would do before moving forward implementing any actual night operations with single engine air tankers. Across the country, there are a lot of agencies looking at this technology. In California, LA County currently uses night operations with helicopters with fixed tanks. Cal Fire has been looking at this technology as well. And as Doug mentioned, we wanted to kind of close with a safety update. So we've been working with ODF safety manager David Grimm to get some updated numbers, and I want to kind of walk through this chart for you. This is looking at our fiscal years, and what you see is some of the total hours worked and then the incident rate. So total hours worked, incident rates in the blue. And what we typically see is that, and the total hours worked are in millions. So typically we see about an average of 9.5 injuries per 1.4 million hours worked. And what you see is that's fairly consistent across the fiscal years, even as the hours increased with exposure. And this is all work for the department. This is not just firefighting. This is all the work we do across the department. It does not include the three operating associations. So no data included for those folks in this. One of the things you'll note, there was a little bit of an increase in fiscal year 18. We went from that average of about 9.5 injuries per 1.4 million hours to about 11.5. So it looks a little bit dramatic on the slide, but it wasn't a huge increase. As we've seen right now, it looks like, you know, this trend is going down. We don't have all the data for fiscal 19 yet. We get the hours worked through the Department of Administrative Services, and we don't have those hours yet. But what we do have is our injury numbers, and they were right around 67 injuries for last year. So the injuries are already down, back in more line with our normal amount of injuries, and the rate should be down, probably lower than average, because we had a lot of exposure hours, a lot of hours worked in the fiscal year last year with the busy fire season. So we look for that little uptick to come back down when we close out and report later on in the year the actual hours work for fiscal year 18. A couple of other things to note, our yellow sheet program we mentioned is our accident and injury reporting program that we've implemented last year, reinforced it this year. You know, not all agencies, not all industries report accidents the same. We report anything that requires any kind of medical attention, so common injuries that we're tracking are slips, trips, and falls are our biggest, sprains and strains second most, and then animal insects, stings, being struck with falling debris, tick bites, all those type of things are reported as well. Those are our leading causes of injuries. Wanted to mention, as Doug highlighted, Fire Operations Manager Blake Ellis is closing out a safety review down in Grants Pass. Our severity crew last month had a near miss in what could have been a significant automobile accident. They were traveling near Cave Junction, two-lane highway. Oncoming vehicle crossed the center line. They took defensive driving action and were able to sustain the impact down the driver's side of a crew cab vehicle that they were driving. The impact was significant enough to completely dislodged the rear axle on the pickup, and the pickup was totaled as a result. Fortunately, neither the driver in the oncoming car and the three ODF severity crew members were injured. Our employees were transported for medical evaluation but released from the hospital with no injuries. And the rest of our crew that was in vehicles behind took really responsible action securing the scene and assisting with the other driver when the accident occurred. So a really, really good outcome. The defensive driving program and the lessons learned, we created a driving video after some accidents in the 2017 fire season. So that training is obviously paying off and had a good outcome in what could have been significantly different. So as Chief Graff mentioned, we will continue to produce a safety update in our future fire season updates. And with that, I would close. And we'll take any comments.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. I think it's been nice this year. I haven't had, as a landowner land manager, it's been nice having conversations with district foresters about where our resources are and where our logging, where our firefighting equipment is. So it's been very nice. But I do want to commend, I got a call from Joe Hessel yesterday, you know, moving into regulated closure, crossing that high fire threshold, ERCs, and so on. And even though we're in a really, a mild fire season, they're still maintaining that communication with landowners. It's really valuable because what that does for us as a land manager is we go out, we touch base with our contract crews, which are out there with our equipment and with our logging force, and make sure that we're ready. And because we know that things can change at a moment's notice. So I just, even though we're in that mild season, it needs to be at the top of our minds what potentially can happen. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. I've got a question. Looking at the maps you had there on fire risk, it seems surprising that you've got Eastern Oregon listed as, a normal level of risk. And so I'm wondering, if you talk to me or talk to any of my neighbors over there in rangeland areas and around Eastern Oregon forests, we would all be saying, oh, my God, we have so much risk here because of the amount of fuel, because of our wet spring. Is that not calculated into these maps? Is fuel on the ground in arid areas like where we are not part of that? Because it doesn't match the sort of the common sense locals view that we would have.
Board Member Kelly, I think a lot of factors come into play here when we look at this significant fire potential. Fuels is certainly one of them. Fuel types in Eastern Oregon, you know, come with significant fire potential, fire behavior, typically as it is in the dry climate there. This is looking at several factors of weather, drought, long-term fuels and weather conditions, not just the actual static fuel condition on the ground. While it somewhat downplays the significant fire potential in Eastern Oregon, I think, again, it's looking at the fact that we're not seeing the heavy drought setting in as much in Eastern Oregon. The other factor, too, is these were released at the beginning of July, so the next update could show a different picture across Eastern Oregon, given the current conditions.
I would also add the key message for Eastern Oregon is, you know, locally, I think people recognize that's an elevated location for wildfire risk. And that's the normal condition in which exists on that east side. So this map indicates, you know, where we look at above normal conditions.
Yeah, I guess I would argue that you look at your methodology just a bit here because, the conditions that we see now were known by the end of May. If it wasn't caught then, I doubt it's going to be caught July 1st because nothing has changed. You know, all the moisture that created all that growth, that's all been well established. So anyhow, that's my comment. Thank you.
Well, and so I'll just add in, whenever I talk about a normal fire season for Eastern Oregon, I remind people what a normal fire season for Eastern Oregon, because it is one of our high fire districts over in all three districts in Eastern Oregon as well as Southern Oregon. So being normal isn't, you know, great news. It'd be better if it was below normal. Then,
State Forest Authority, I might add also a statistic for what is normal to give folks context. The data we provided today, you know, 433 fires at 1,400 acres, that was on ODF protected lands, 16 million acres of forest and grazing lands across the state. When you consider all jurisdictions statewide on an annual basis at the end of fire season, we typically range from just over 2,000 fires with 500,000 acres burned is our 10-year average. So currently where we're at on statewide data is 770 fires, so we're getting close to half of our 10-year average statewide across all jurisdictions, and 4,000 acres burned, 4,400 acres burned. So statewide, we're looking outstanding compared to where we typically are, and the cost factor that Deputy Chief Ron Graham highlighted emphasizes that also.
Just a point of clarification, and I appreciate Jim's question. So does this fire potential really focus in on the probability of ignition, or is it conflating ignition with fire size? I'm a little confused because it seems like there are two different probabilities there, correct?
Right. This is not really indicative of number of starts. This is more indicative of large fire, significant fire potential.
So once they get it going, then it's really right. The size. Okay, thank you.
And this is a predictive services tool at the National Center in Boise that provides where do we see nationally the greatest risk potential for catastrophic lodge fires. It's based on predictive models looking into the future also.
Yeah, I want to thank you for adding that information on the safety. I think it's something that we need to pay more attention to, and I appreciate you adding it to your report. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Board Member Rose. And I think that I would also just emphasize the importance of this feedback and this opportunity we have before the board, because what you say and ask matters to us, and that just raised, you know, a little bit more awareness that we want to be front and center in safety with the board also, and those messages carry through the ranks. So thanks for bringing it up.
Well, in terms of what's going on around the rest of the country and impact on us, do you want to talk about that a little bit as well? I know Alaska seems like it's red hot.
Yeah, Chair Emison, Alaska has been really the center and focus of the activity across the country year to date. Alaska's burned well over 1.6 million acres already, and it's looking like that will continue for quite some time. The rest of the country has been relatively quiet. The Southwest is starting to come online with their monsoon lightning fires that are starting across there in the Great Basin. Looks like California will finally maybe see the same shift that we're seeing into more summer-like weather, and we expect their activity level to pick up as well. Florida, East Coast, through the Midwest, into the Rockies has been relatively quiet. The fire season in Alaska and our slow start has allowed us to provide several resources to aid Alaska through our Northwest Fire Compact. As you recall, the last several years, we've had Alaska, Canadian resources, other states helping us significantly. So this year, we've sent about 70 people total out of state to Alaska, up to Alberta, and to Washington, all to help with their fire seasons. This provided great experience, training, working on task books, building qualifications, and exposing our people to different fire types, fuel types, and firefighting tactics. So Alaska's been the center. At some point, you know, that will eventually taper off, and we'll see what the rest of the country has for the remainder of the fire season.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. So we will take a break. We were set on the executive session at 11. I don't know whether we can always stay. Okay. And that'll be in the class up room. And again, that executive session will be for the purpose of conferring with legal counsel. So it's not something in which the public is able to participate.
And then we will be reconvening in a public meeting at 1 o'clock.
In this room. Yeah.
This room.